Good morning. You are listening to Raven Radio. Today is Wednesday, December 5th, 2012. I'm Holly Keene, and this is Raven News. A businessman who spent millions of his company's money to build a cruise dock outside of Sitka 2 years ago will finally get his first regular customers. The Seven Seas Navigator and the Regatta both have announced plans to dock at Halibut Point Marine in 2013. For Chris McGraw, it means his wait for business is finally over, but the work of moving thousands of people is just the beginning. KCAW's Ed Ronco has more on the dock and what it could mean for the community.
The old Sitka dock is about 5 miles north of downtown Sitka, in a relatively industrial area of town. To get there, I drive out Halibut Point Road and turn left into a boatyard, avoiding the neighboring lot full of shipping containers and security warnings. I get out of my car near a giant travel lift that hauls boats out of the water for maintenance and repair. Chris McGraw is standing nearby.
How's it going?
You good?
Good.
McGraw is manager of Halibut Point Marine, which owns the dock.
Yeah, dimensions are 470 feet long, 55 feet wide, and the overall draws about 10 feet of water, and we have 8 feet sticking up, so it's 18 feet.
Giant black fenders have been pulled out of the water and sit near bollards where the ships will tie up. This floating concrete structure used to be part of Highway 520 in Washington State and carried commuters across Lake Washington between Bellevue and Seattle. Soon, it will carry tourists. The Seven Seas Navigator and the Regatta, both cruise ships already on Sitka's 2013 schedule, will use the dock instead of anchoring near downtown for the duration of the season.
The ships hold, I think, somewhere between 500 and 600 passengers, so it'll range anywhere from 12,000 to 14,000.
Given the number of visits that they're going to make.
Yeah, it's depending on how many people are on the boat, you know, I don't know if they're always full or not, but they have 23 visits.
Yeah.
Supporters of using a dock say more passengers spend time in town when they can walk off the ship rather than having to take a smaller boat to shore, and they hope that translates into more business for downtown retailers and more sales tax revenue to the city. But there are also costs. Passengers will take a bus into town, and the city plans to pay $3 per head to the company that can provide the transportation. McGraw's firm plans to bid on the bus contract. The money will come from a per-passenger tax the state charges to cruise vessels and then passes along to municipalities. The cost to the city goes beyond cruise ship head tax money, though. The two ships together would have paid Sitka more than $16,000 to anchor and ferry passengers to shore at the O'Connell Bridge and Crescent Harbor. Now that they're using the dock, they'll be paying their fees to Halibut Point Marine, and it will probably be more than what they would have given the city. McGraw said the cruise ships will pay $3 a passenger to dock at Old Sitka, and that means up to $39,000 for Halibut Point Marine, provided every ship is fully loaded. And with that money, Halibut Point Marine will finally start to see income from the dock, which was built without any commitments from cruise companies.
We had thought that, we build the dock, and why wouldn't they tie up? You know, you don't see them in Juneau, you know, anchoring up when there's empty dock space.
But McGraw says as a locally owned business, it was difficult to try to get the attention of international cruise lines.
You know their names and you have their phone numbers and their email addresses, but you can never get a hold of them and they never return your phone calls or your emails. And really, unless they want to talk to you, you don't get much FaceTime.
Just keep trying.
Keep trying. Persistence.
And it's paid off, apparently.
So. It's starting to, yes. Yeah.
Persistence might have been backed up by evidence. At the end of the 2012 season, the Celebrity Century tied up at Old Sitka. McGraw says that single visit showed other cruise lines that the dock is viable. In addition to the two ships planning to use Old Sitka in 2013, a Disney vessel has signed on for one visit in 2014. It will be the cruise line's first visit to Sitka. Disney will not ferry its passengers to shore, so without a dock, their ships would not visit at all. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Ed Ronco.
Alaska Governor Sean Parnell announced Tuesday in Ketchikan that the state will immediately begin negotiations with the Ketchikan Shipyard to design the first of at least two smaller ferries for the Alaska Marine Highway System, rather than the 350-foot ferry that had been planned. Parnell says $120 million budgeted for the project would not be enough to build the larger ferry in Ketchikan. He says he's dedicated to constructing Alaska ferries in Alaska, which prompted the new plan. The governor stopped by KRBD's studio and sat down with Layla Carey to talk about this new direction.
at first we began looking, you know, how do you squeeze costs out of this Alaska class vessel, this 350-foot vessel? How do you squeeze costs out of it so we can stay within the budgeted amount? And it just became clear that the cost estimates were really between about $150 and $167 million. So there was no real squeezing that could be done to get it down to the $120 million figure. And the plan really is to build more vessels here in Ketchikan than just that one in any event. And this first vessel or vessels are important for that reason, that we can't allow cost escalation and we can't allow building over budget. Because if we do, then we've demonstrated that maybe we ought to be looking elsewhere. You know, if we can't build in Alaska on budget, then there are other hungry shipyards in the rest of the country that would like that work. That's not satisfactory to me. I want these ships built in Alaska. I think Alaskans can build Alaska's ferries in Alaska. That's my goal. So then we began looking at how do we chop feet off this ferry? You know, how do we shrink the size of it? And you know what we found is if we actually look at this differently, if we quit looking at that 350-foot ferry as a main liner, as a, you know, with staterooms and everything, why not look at the function that it was really going to serve? And this vessel in particular was going to serve the Lynn Canal area around Juneau. So Juneau, Skagway, Haines, that kind of area is what the design was for. And we discovered that we could build two smaller Alaska class ferries for that $120 million. So that's going to be the direction of this. That way, these vessels can still be built in Ketchikan, and we can actually build them in a less costly fashion. They can be run in a less costly fashion, run more efficiently.
So basically, they'd be a day ferry.
Correct. So they would have a home port every night, just like a number of the ferries here do. So,
does this also mean that the first one would be ready to go faster?
My direction today at the Rotary is for our DOT commissioner, Pat Kemp, to enter into negotiations with Vigor, Alaska Ship and Dry Dock, on moving forward with two smaller vessels and creating that design for those smaller vessels. So I would leave it to him, defer to him on in terms of how quickly that can be done, but certainly the construction time will be less.
That was Governor Sean Parnell talking with KRBD's Lila Carey in Ketchikan. A meeting about the federal government's Fishery Observer Program drew a large crowd of vessel owners to Petersburg's Fire Hall last week. Federal officials addressed dozens of questions and concerns from local fishermen, most of whom will be included in the program for the first time starting in January. Matt Lichtenstein takes a look at some of those questions.
The Federal Observer Program in Alaska dates back to the late 70s, according to the National Marine Fisheries Service's Martin Leflett, who told the crowd this was the first big tune-up in 23 years for the program. Until now, it's mainly affected boats over 60 feet long, fishing groundfish like pollock and cod.
And that program now is expanding to the halibut fleet, and it's going down to boats less than 60 feet. So we're going down to 40 feet.
As Leflett explained, the observer's job is to gather data for NIMFS and the North Pacific Fishery Management Council, as well as for the industry.
We're doing it partly for you, partly for us, for our agency responsibilities, and to a great extent for the council. Because the council and all of us here are charged with managing these fisheries, and we're trying to get good estimates. Catch, bycatch, discards, halibut mortality. How are people handling those fish?
In the new program, much of the Petersburg fleet generally falls into a category called partial coverage. That's for vessels 40 to 60 feet long that are fishing halibut or groundfish in federal fisheries. Some of those boats could be randomly selected to carry an observer for one or more trips throughout the year, or for every trip during a two-month period. It would depend on the size of the vessel. The specifics get complicated and vary. For instance, boats smaller than 40 feet are not included in the requirements for now, while boats 57.5 to 60 feet have to give 72-hour notice of each fishing trip and may or may not be among the 15% selected to take an observer. Some fishermen, like Mickey Knight, didn't like the fact that a specific boat might be chosen more than once.
I was thinking if you got picked, you're out of the box for a while. Oh, everybody. See, that's not random the way I talk.
Yeah.
If I get picked and I did it, you get it over with.
Yeah.
I'd almost volunteer for that and then not worry about it for a couple years.
The vessel owners in the audience didn't raise objections to being observed. Rather, many of their concerns and questions focused on the logistics of carrying an observer, an extra person on a small boat with limited room and an often changing fishing schedule. How will it affect or impede their operations? What's the skipper's responsibilities under the program? For instance, what if your boat's selected but the observer's delayed because of weather? Or maybe there are so many boats heading out at the same time that there are not enough observers. Gary Slavin was one of several people who raised that issue with NIMS Glenn Campbell. Campbell repeatedly emphasized that once a skipper gave the proper notice, it was up to NIMS and its contractor to provide an observer in time.
Let's say 70 trips from this port get logged and 35 of them get picked for observer coverage. That's their responsibility to somehow get those observers there.
But my question is, what happens if they don't have an observer?
Again, it goes back to the same stuff.
It's the same stuff.
We are not going to keep you at the dock. If everybody followed their rules and they were unable to get you an observer, you are released from coverage and you can go fishing.
For nearly 3 hours, fishermen in the audience raised scenario after scenario and issue after issue. Andy Kittums was among them.
Do we got to go through safety drills? Do they have free run of the boat? Do we have the food, meals, I mean, the whole gamut? Because we're kind of kings of our own little fiefdom.
Yeah.
And we have crews that have been on our boats for years.
Yeah.
Everybody knows the program. We've got somebody that I don't know if they've even been on a boat before.
Right.
Observers carry their own safety gear, including a survival suit, and they learn how to use it in the water as part of their training, according to NIMS. As far as meals and living accommodations, they will be following the boat's routine, according to Leftled and other officials. The new observer program goes into effect January 1st. In Petersburg, I'm Matt Lichtenstein.
And that's all for Raven News. You're listening to KCAW in Sitka.